Following program has been furnished and paid for by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSCB and KGBC are not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
You know, it's been a while since we've taken a look at the U.S. debt clock picture. Never one to forget just how bad off our current fiscal situation is. And I thought we could start off today by revisiting the usdebtclock.org site, which tracks assorted fiscal characteristics and levels of the U.S. budget. It's real-time calculations of just an incredible amount of data that is a constant reminder of just how fast and how much we're digging ourselves into, ongoing digging ourselves into a hole. I'm thinking it's been probably at least 2 or 3 months since we've had this little stroll down that site. But for those of you that have not been paying attention, our national, I think it's probably about $35 trillion. Last we took a look, it's now almost $38.5 trillion. And the if you break that down by person, it's, let's say, by citizen, it's a whopping $111,769. If you look at it by taxpayer, it's roughly $330,000 a piece. And that's just a raw calculation of dividing almost $38.5 trillion by the number of U.S. taxpayers. And it's staggering. It's just absolutely staggering. One bright spot in our overall fiscal picture is the tariff revenue that we've brought in, almost $370 billion. That's crazy. That's crazy. $369,938+ billion. Revenue per taxpayer is off tariffs is $3,250. $3,250. That's a staggering amount of money when you figure that just as little as a year ago, it was I wouldn't say it's zero. I've forgotten what the tariffs were. I know we had some tariffs, but there's no question they've been accelerated and, you know, assorted other fees and taxes. You know, the H-1B fee now for a visa is $100,000. And, you know, there's assorted other tariffs on products, countries. You know, I'm not sure how many different ways we're dicing that equation. But in any event, it doesn't matter too much in the overall, but I guess it makes some of us feel better that, hey, we're at least trying to level the playing field with a number of the participants. But in any event, there's some key numbers that I wanted to, as we often look at, the components of the national budget, which are staggering to think that, you know, we're spending the levels we are, but it's interesting to look not just at the top line, but at the four largest budget components. And they really haven't changed, although, you know, it's, well, I'll just tell you, Medicare, Medicaid combined, it's $1.7 trillion. $1.7 trillion. That's the largest component of the annual federal expenditures. Social Security is right behind it at $1.6 trillion. So just those two components are literally $3.3 trillion. Just those two items. So if we spent money on nothing else, $3.3 trillion would be required to operate the government. And of course the trust funds that back up each of those two categories are perilously low, and I believe it's roughly 2034 before the at least the Social Security piece will be expired. I believe Medicare is a bit earlier. So, you know, when we talk about a sad state of affairs, it's going to get real, folks, for a lot of people. And, you know, it happens whether we fix it or not, meaning the impact. You know, the Social Security checks that are going out now and up until that point, whatever they are, 2034, will be cut across the board somewhere between 23% to 25%. Depends on some of the economics that occur between now and then. But long story short, whatever, if you're getting Social Security at such time, you'll be getting 25% less when that, or 23% to 25% less when that period comes. Anyway, the third category, the third highest category of expenditure, remains the interest expense on our debt. It's about $968 billion, and then defense is fourth place on the list at $930 billion. And, you know, it's amazing how much of our budget is already spent when we wake up every day, essentially. I mean, we're not looking for new ways to spend it. It's a very small piece that's actually discretionary. And, of course, we're borrowing pretty much every penny of that at the current pace. Let's see. I was going to check and see. I know at one point they had added, debt to GDP. And that's the killer. If you look at that ratio, which is kind of the gold standard as to just how, if you want to see just how bad we've digressed, if you go back to 1960, that was my birth year, our federal debt was 52% of GDP. And, of course, it's continued in an upward movement. Until today, we are over the 100% mark. We're 121.6% of GDP. And, you know, that's a number that back in 2009, when the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, who does an annual 10-year study, but in addition to that, they provided Congress with an estimate of how high we'd have to raise our tax brackets. Now, we're talking on the individual side. And at the time, we had three different tax brackets, 10%, 25%, and 39%. But in any event, they said the 10% bracket would need to go up to 25%. 25 would need to go up to the 39% bracket would need to go up to 80 8%, and it was big changes coming. Now, how does the tariff affect that? Well, they're not saying because, or they didn't say it because the tariffs weren't significant back in 2009. So, obviously, you know, if we continue on, I mean, we're coming up to, the current budgetary cycle expires September of 2026. That's assuming, by the way, that we are able to move past the January 31 deadline on what we're currently funded through. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize, because there's so much back and forth in the media on the discussion about continuing resolutions and tax legislation, et cetera. But don't forget that, you know, we just came out of the shutdown recently, the government shutdown. And that deal that was struck is only to carry us through the end of next month, end of January. And the combined shutdown we've just come through, plus if it shuts down again, I know there was a warning. I'll see if I can find that article here when we go to break. But there's a list of, I believe, seven or more former IRS commissioners that are talking about what a disaster the 2025 filing season, or 2026 filing 2025 returns will be, and the impact on our fiscal health in terms of being able to spend money. And it was, I'm going to say, a bipartisan warning, although, you know, I think most of us have gotten so tired of hearing about shutdowns, and we probably still wonder, you know, what's truly the impetus or the criteria behind a shutdown, and literally how much does it really affect us? I think there's a lot of folks that see it maybe as a way to reduce our spending, or at least slow the spending, if government's not open. I mean, technically open, if we had to shut down again. But that would be bad timing if that were to happen. And we're already seeing increased turnaround on any kind of IRS request. If you've got an issue and you're trying to resolve it with the IRS, it's taking a lot longer, even though government's back open. Still taking quite some time. Well, let's do this. I'm going to look for that article while we take a break. Let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll circle back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And while we were on a break, I pulled up the article I was referencing about the former IRS commissioners recently. It's been about a month ago. You may have seen some of the reporting in the news. It was widely covered. Danny Werfel, which was one of the fairly recent commissioners. And by the way, I don't know, I saw a number. I want to say we've had like seven acting IRS commissioners in a very recent short period of time. I don't know if it'll say it in this article or not, but had a lot of change just here recently. In fact, the most recent, well, I think this article addresses that. Let me make my way through it. But we had one person, Billy Long, that barely took office. And anyway, I and it's amazing how even at that level, you would think that, you know, our government would act... Well, maybe you wouldn't, would act somewhat responsibly in terms of communications. And there's a notice in here that, I mean, there's a mention in this article about how Billy Long didn't, I mean, there was very little communication between his announcement that he was not going to complete his 5-year term. He was less than halfway through. And, you know, Werfel, who was the former commissioner before Long, said he had sought some guidance from incoming Secretary Scott Bessent. So this was back last November on how to facilitate the transition. And Werfel said he never got an answer back. He said that's when I realized that Bessent's not returning my call was my answer. So, you know, this is kind of alarming. I mean, these are people at the top of our government when it comes to our financial apparatus. And, you know, I don't know. That's odd. There's got to be two sides to that story. But anyway, so let's take a look at what the warnings are, because this is extreme. I mean, in my 40-plus years of CPA work, I can't think of any period that even comes close to what we've seen with a 40-plus day shutdown. And it's not just the shutdown. You've got normal or above normal attrition occurring at IRS. You've also got folks that are taking the early retirement or early employment, whatever you want to call it. A lot of the folks that took advantage of the option that Doge provided, I believe, is the one that's been referenced. The amount of the manpower at the IRS has gone way down. But anyway, with the start of the next tax filing season just months away, former IRS Commissioner Danny Werfel That's W-E-R-F-E-L for those of you that might care, if you want to look it up. W-E-R-F-E-L expressed concern over the now depleted agency's readiness, especially the heels, or on the heels of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, the OBBBA, and advocated for a well-funded IRS with a clear leadership structure and direction. So let's get into a few areas and see what the concerns, the specific concerns are. The keynote speaker at the Tax Trends Summit, co-hosted by the American Bar Association tax section and tax analysts, so think tank, I believe in Washington, that opines on certain tax legislation and budget matters. In any event, Warfel said this time of year is a critical period for the IRS to prepare ahead of the filing season. He likened the process to opening night on Broadway. The work involves updating forms, instructions, and technology to reflect a higher than average number of changes in the tax code this time around due to the July 4th enactment of the OBBBA, which featured several tax provisions beyond extensions to the expiring portions of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That'd be the 2017 legislation that was signed into law during President Trump's first term. And you may recall there were a number of provisions of that tax bill, Tax Act, that sunsetted here right during this period, this month, you know, prior to 1-1-2026, and some of those were extended. So, you know, there's a lot going on. If you're the group or the parties charged with switching the new year software updates over or putting those in place, you've got a yeoman's effort that's going to be required to make that happen between not just the expiring, but the new provisions that have been put into place, and there are a lot of them. These preparations have been stymied by the current government shutdown, IRS furloughs, because a lot of people were told to take time off, and overall reduction to the agency's workforce. Warfel, who was serving as acting commissioner during the 2013 shutdown that led to the decision to delay tax season by a week, called the mounting disruptions, quote, a big deal, end quote, for taxpayers expecting refunds. There's the next subtitle of this article is No Game Without the Refs, addressing the general public's often negative perception of the agency. Warfel compared the IRS to National Football League referees. They get the call wrong and 70,000 people stand up and boo. They get the call right, 70,000 people stand up and boo. Doesn't matter whether you're right or wrong, he said. While no one throws a parade for the referees after the Super Bowl, there's no game without the refs. You just have chaos. A weakened IRS, he argued, does not lead to lower taxes for compliant taxpayers, but instead creates more stress and only benefits the bad actors. Frustration understandably builds for taxpayers waiting on hold for lengthy amounts of time to reach a live service representative. And I'll tell you, that's even for us professionals who have priority phone lines, there's been a noticeable time that you remain on hold. But when a caller does get through, the question then becomes whether the representative has the tools they need to quickly access the taxpayer's account and the capacity to resolve their issues, Warfel illustrated. On the business front, he affirmed that corporations enjoy tax cuts, but not in exchange for tax chaos. An unstable and unpredictable tax system discourages investment, he said, liking it to highway speed enforcement. While Congress can change the speed limit, the IRS must be able to enforce it. If there are no sheriffs policing the speed limit, the resulting chaos makes it possible for businesses to plan and build effectively. And, you know, I would suggest that's been a problem whether the IRS was fully staffed or not fully staffed. I mean, it's always been an issue if you need assistance. And, again, the wait times have certainly gone up. I'm sure a lot of it's to do with the workforce issue and, you know, the shutdown, maybe not. I mean, I don't know. It has lengthened, and of course, anyone that's involved with government or Congress or even the IRS is going to point to the shutdown as the reason. But I think for those of us that have watched this from afar, or maybe close, for the last many years, turnaround responsiveness has always been an issue that we've had to deal with. Anyway, moving on, Werfel stepped down as commissioner on the day of President Trump's inauguration in January after Trump announced his intention to give the job to former Congressman Billy Long, who would go on to become one of the seven individuals to briefly lead the IRS this year. An audience member asked Werfel, this is in 2025, we've had seven commissioners, most of them obviously temporary. An audience member asked Werfel to shed light on his decision to vacate the position, even though he was less than halfway into his five-year term. In any event, Werfel explained that after the Billy Long announcement, and I mentioned this a few minutes ago, he sought guidance from incoming Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent on how to facilitate the transition. We tried to reach out to him, but never could, Werfel recounted. I was still waiting for the phone to ring, and that's when I realized that his not getting back to me was my answer. He concluded that this leadership vacuum creates an unhealthy government structure where it's unclear who has the authority to make critical decisions, causing progress to stall. Werfel ultimately framed the issue as a lack of clear, articulated planning for the agency's future, contrasting the current uncertainty with the modernization plan that his team issued. The former commissioner noted that the plan was met at the time with criticism for lacking in specifics. He felt the plan already had a ton of detail, but if they wanted more detail, let's get them the detail they need. Quote unquote. Let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll circle back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word and two the wise. You better get to living.
Hey. Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and fantasies. And there are many just like me.
With big dreams and fantasies.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I wanted to mention, I guess, some back to basics issues. The let's see here. I had a couple of Zillow articles talking about markets and, you know, apartments, mortgages, and home values. I guess, you know, it's kind of a confluence of what's going on in the market. Let me find this article. And, of course, so much of the information that we look at is reflective of averages in the market, and you know, it seems like, you know, when you talk about averages, you have to remember that none of us are average. And let's see here, where did I put that article? We're all standard, right? None of us are quote average. You kind of have the pushback from the market of, well, you know, rental rates have declined in many markets, but hopefully there's enough balance in supply and demand to generate more construction volume and, you know, try to stabilize the market before it swings too far to the other side. But I would say that, you know, syndications are a solution to the problem of low supply. And let's talk about how that occurs. And I've got an article. Let's see, where was this published? Well, I need to, it doesn't look like I included my source. Oh, it's Bigger Pockets. That's where this came from. I didn't need to include it because I should have remembered that. Let's look at how they, and Bigger Pockets, for those of you that don't know, is one of the larger podcast and investor organizations in the U.S. And, you know, they've got a good vantage point to make some of the statements that they make. On the other hand, Bigger Pockets themselves are not operating. They're a informational type organization, a membership organization. So they're members. They have some members that are operating multifamily properties, but they're tend to be more single family in focus. But anyway, let's run through this article quickly because they've got some good points in here. I've heard this story hundreds of times, maybe a thousand. I was so excited about investing in real estate. Then I tried it. It was nothing like I saw on HGTV or insert your mentor investment platform of choice. Those are my words. I can think back to 2003 when I first attended a case study night at one of the leading investor / mentor programs. And it was interesting talking to some folks after that program as to how excited, I mean, that's the best word that comes to mind, they were thinking, aha, here's the solution to achieving above average rates of return. And I don't disagree, but I also don't buy the sales huff that is put forth on almost every platform when they have their meetups or have their case study nights, whatever they call it in their particular niche. And, you know, they talk about making money in the up markets and in the down markets. And, of course, these are just broad enough statements that you can't say they're lying, but you can very clearly see they're not telling you the whole truth if you've lived through any of those times. And I think it was a couple weeks ago on the show that I mentioned I don't like that kind of huff, sales huff, because as Bob Dole used to say, you know it, I know it, and the American people know it, that it's not 100% of the truth. The reality is all markets go up and all markets go down, and people lose money in both markets, and they make money in both markets. So you're doing nothing more than stating the obvious, and you're leaning on the good market information. You're not going into details on the bad market information. And as the last 2 years have shown us, and I don't care which organization you want to pick that mentors real estate investors, multifamily and single family, there's not one of them that can look you in the eye and tell you that they have not had any members lose money. I know we've got a Houston platform that has a rather notable personality running it, and I've heard him say it 100 times now over the last 20 years. He's never lost money on a piece of real estate. Interest rates that were, 3%, if they were adjusted or variable, became 7%. Don't tell me that you made money on those transactions if you time those wrong. In real estate, it may be location, 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 but you should slip timing into one of those three slots and maybe market sentiment in the third. And the combination of timing, location, or location, timing, and market sentiment is more nearly correct as to what makes real estate a good thing, an exciting thing, and one that you will achieve above average rates of return. I guess what I'm saying is I don't disagree that we make money in the good markets and in the bad markets, the up markets, the down markets, etc. But don't just say we make money. Let's say we lose money in those markets as well, or we can lose money. And again, there are a few syndicators that have weathered the storm as of late, but I would tell you the platforms that they work with have many others that didn't. And so the platform itself, the group you're going to join, I'd be real careful because they don't know any more than a lot of folks do that are in the multifamily game. They've made some mistakes along the way. They did not warn off their members in a fashion that truly saved calamity. And, you know, I know that firsthand. I've got clients that are with a number of these platforms, and there's no one platform that I can tell you you can invest with and put your head in the sand and just sit back and collect your quarterly checks. That doesn't happen. But in any event, most of these investors, going back to the article where they're talking about how excited people get after they have their first get-together, you know, most of these investors already have a day job, plus hobbies, family, friends, and a life. But most of them didn't have extensive real-world experience acquiring, and this is sort of a single-family statement, acquiring, repairing, and managing properties. Many of these investors found they were spending all their free time seeking out the perfect acquisition. And by the way, there is no perfect acquisition. There's the one thing I've learned over the last 20 years of investing in real estate is at some point you're moving forward on trust. You're trusting multiple parties in a transaction. You're trusting the seller to be honest about what they're selling you. You're trusting the syndicator, your lead partner that you're handing your hard-earned funds to invest on your behalf, hopefully to return a profit. You're trusting their mentors that are reviewing the transaction. And you're also trusting the fact that it won't take, and this is a fact, some projects might take twice as long and cost twice as much as they're budgeted, especially for people doing it for the first time. And, oh, yeah, lead partners and syndicators, they've all got a first time. And, you know, again, we hope for the best, but you can't always count on it. New roofs, HVAC systems, et cetera, can eat up years of profits. And when I look at, not to mention things like evictions, these are all things, and this is an article I'll come back to next Sunday because we're right here at the end of the show. The unanticipated expenses will literally cut you off at the knees on many of these projects that people have done here recently. Interest rates going up from 3% to 7%. That's a death blow. Even the best syndicators have gone under or had foreclosures on projects in the last couple of years because of that. Okay, well, listen, I appreciate you tuning in today. I look forward to next week. You will find us right here on Sunday, or at on Sunday at 7 a.m. on 700 a.m. KSEV. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.